The Delva Medical School. I taught brain surgery. And they're trying to figure out what questions to ask at the interview for the students who are applying to study. Because everybody who applies to a school like that has straight A's. But just because you have A's doesn't mean that you're going to be able to be a good surgeon. And so they interviewed the students who didn't do well, the ones who had to quit. And they found that two questions were really good at weeding out students like that from the applicant pool. One was, could you tell us about a mistake you made recently? And if the student said, I can't think of any mistakes I made recently, they'd immediately disqualify the student. Because they had interviewed some of the students who had failed, and they were appalled at some of the mistakes these students had made, and the students didn't even recognize that there were mistakes. So the first thing they were looking for was someone who admitted a mistake, recognized a mistake. And the second question was, how would you do it differently? If a person really wants to learn, they would think immediately, recognize a mistake, and then figure out how not to make that mistake again. If you see, well, I made a mistake, but it was beyond my control or things that I couldn't help, again, that would be a student that would disqualify. And the same principle applies to the meditation practice as a whole. We come here because we make mistakes. We're attached to wrong ways of doing things. When they talk about attachment, it's not so much that you're attached to things, you're attached to what you can do with the things, perhaps. We're attached to actions. After all, the mind doesn't have a hand that can grasp onto things. But it does have intentions, and the intentions lead to action. We have certain ways of acting that we do over and over and over again that become habitual. And the Buddha is pointing out that we do these things in ignorance, and because we're in ignorance, we cause suffering for ourselves, for the people around us. I.e., we're making mistakes. The attachment itself is a kind of mistake, because we do something and we think we're going to get good results out of it, and we're not getting good results, and yet we do it again and again and again. Either thinking that there's no real problem, or the reason that things don't come out well is due to factors beyond our control. Or having the magic thinking that maybe if I do it one more time, this time it'll be different. That's Einstein's definition of insanity. So this is the habit we've got to work with. As the Buddha said, the way you deal with a habit like this is to figure out why you do it. As you figure out why you do it, you've got to be careful to see when the original impulse comes, what's coming along with it. In other words, what's its origination in the Buddhist terms? These impulses don't just come out of nowhere. They may seem to come out of nowhere because a lot of them come from your past karma. But then the decision to go along with it, to run with it, that's a present moment decision. And all too often we're not even present for that. So we want to learn why we're doing things. This is why we have to get the mind really still, so we can see these things. And then when the impulse leaves, why does the impulse leave? In other words, your desire to do that, when it suddenly goes away, what made it go away? Why did you decide it wasn't worth it? Sometimes it's simply because another desire comes along that seems better. Sometimes you forget, but sometimes you begin to see this is going nowhere and you drop it, but then you forget that you had seen that it was going nowhere, and you come back to it again. So this process of origination and passing away is something you want to look at very carefully. In addition to that, the Buddha says you want to look at the allure. Why do you like doing this? And again, that may be something you're not all that aware of. You may have your formal reasons, the reasons that you would present to other people. But then you can also have your informal reasons, the ones that actually get the work done inside, the ones that say, I like this because of this, and let's go with it. This looks like fun. This looks like it's going to be worthwhile. And again, it requires that the mind be really clear to see that. Because if you don't see what the real allure is for something, you're never going to let it go, no matter how much you see the drawbacks, which is the next stage. But no matter how much you see the drawbacks, if you don't see the actual allure, you're going to be shooting in the wrong direction. And as John Lee's analogy, it's like shooting at the shadow of something or stabbing the shadow of something. You don't get the real thing. So you have to be very careful to see, what is it that I really think I'm getting out of this? Why does it seem to be worth it, or more than worth it? And then you can compare that with the drawbacks. When I actually do this, what are the real results? This requires a lot of honesty and an ability to gauge that something is a drawback. There are a lot of things we put up with in life, thinking they're okay. And from the Buddha's point of view, they're not okay. Things that he would never rest content with. So you have to learn to recognize. This is where you recognize your mistakes, seeing that what I did actually did have these consequences. And that's when you can balance the allure with the consequences and see that the allure is not worth it. That's when you find the escape, i.e., there's a sense of dispassion. You've seen through why you did this and it wasn't worth it. That's when you can really let go. If you let go because you're told to let go, of course you're going to sneak back and try to pick it up again. But when you let go from having seen, oh, this really is harmful, that's when you've gotten beyond that mistake. This pattern of comparing the allure with the mistakes, you can see all the way through the Buddha's teachings, even before he would teach people the Four Noble Truths. He taught something that was called the graduated discourse. It starts out with generosity, the joy that comes with generosity, and then the long-term benefits. Virtue was the next topic. And again, the joy of being virtuous, of not looking at your behavior and seeing that you don't have anything that you could criticize yourself about your behavior. And then the long-term benefits of that in this life, and then also on into heaven. That was the third topic. The joys of heaven. But then he would focus on the drawbacks of sensuality. Even heavenly sensual pleasures have their drawbacks. And they can be pretty bad. I mean, once you've gotten used to things being really comfortable, you'd fall from heaven, it's not a comfortable fall. And sometimes you fall really hard and really far. Because it's not the case that the devas, when they'd pass away, go to another deva realm or even come back to the human realm. They can fall down to something that's really undesirable. Animal realms, hell realms. And after having shown the drawbacks of sensuality in really strong terms, both in the sense of what you have to do to get this sensual pleasures and how unstable and how unreliable the sensual pleasures are and how they intoxicate the mind. And then they lead to these uncertain ends. That's when you're ready to see that renunciation might be a good thing. Having a mind that's free from sensuality, free from a need to keep fantasizing about sensual pleasures. Then the Buddha said you'd be ready for the Four Noble Truths. So even here, as he's just getting you introduced to the main topic of his teaching, he's already teaching you to look at things in terms of their allure and their drawbacks. And this five-part questionnaire, what is the origination, what is the passing away, the allure, the drawbacks, and the escape. That's the questionnaire for insight. you know, the basic questions of insider. How should fabrications be viewed? How they should be regarded? How they should be let go? This is how you do it. Anything that the mind would fabricate, in other words, anything that it would put together in terms of its thoughts, the way it talks to itself, the decisions it makes, the intentions it has. You've got to learn how to look at it in terms of this fivefold questionnaire. That's how you gain insight so you're not stuck on things. And particularly so you don't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again and or not admitting that you made mistakes. A lot of people don't want to admit mistakes, but that makes them impossible to teach. It makes it impossible for them to learn. As the Buddha said, the people he was looking for were people who were truthful and observant. And if you keep on making mistakes over and over again and don't recognize them as mistakes, you're not truthful and you're not observant. You're living in an alternative reality with alternative facts. But also causing a lot of real harm in the real world. So develop the maturity where you can recognize a mistake and admit a mistake, because that's the only way you're going to learn. That's the only way your Dharma practice is going to progress. Otherwise, it's just a lot of theories. Theories that take you nowhere. Whereas if you learn how to learn from your mistakes, it can take you far. Look at the Buddha himself. He made many mistakes in the course of his path, but he was able to recognize them as mistakes and try to find another way of doing things. He didn't have a teacher to tell him the right way, so he had to cast around many times. But it was by looking at his own actions, learning from his own actions, that he was able to develop more and more skillful actions to the point where he could even understand what it means to act. And what it means to find something in the mind that doesn't act, something that's not fabricated. It's only when he really understood action that he understood what it meant not to fabricate things. And the way we understand action is to try to be more and more skillful in the way you act. To see a mistake as a mistake and try not to repeat it. So this is a principle that starts from the very beginning of the teaching and goes all the way. And if you allow this principle to inform your own practice, your practice has a chance.